Well, this is a story of something that happened in the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes who ruled from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all. In the third year of his reign, King Xerxes gave a banquet. And for 6 months, he put on exhibit the huge wealth of his empire. And at the conclusion of the exhibit, the king threw a week-long party for everyone living in Susa, the capital. And the party was in the courtyard of the king's summer house. Drinks were served. The royal wine flowed freely. The guests could drink as much as they liked. King's orders, with waiters at their elbows to refill the drinks. Meanwhile, the queen, Queen Vashti, was throwing a separate party for the women inside King Xerxes' royal palace. On the seventh day of the party, the king, very high on wine, ordered the seven eunuchs who were his personal servants to bring him Queen Vashti, resplendent, wearing just her crown. He wanted to show her off to the guests. She was extremely good-looking. But Queen Vashti refused to come. The king lost it, seething with anger over her insolence. The king called in his counselors, and he asked them what legal recourse they had against Queen Vashti for not obeying him. Mimikin, one of his advisors, spoke up. "Well, it's not only the king Queen Vashti has insulted, it's all of us. The word's going to get out. Did you hear the latest about Queen Vashti? King Xerxes ordered her to be brought before him, and she wouldn't do it. Now, when the women hear this, they'll start treating their husbands with contempt. The day the wives of the Persian and Medes officials get wind of the queen's brazenness, they'll be out of control. Now, king, is this what we want? A country of angry women who don't know their place. So, if the king agrees, let him pronounce a royal ruling that Vashti is permanently banned from King Xerxes' presence. And then let's let the king give her a royal position to a woman who knows her place. When the king's ruling becomes public knowledge throughout the kingdom, every woman, regardless of her social position, will show proper respect to her husband." Well, the king liked this idea. So they sent bulletins to every part of the kingdom. "Every man is master of his own house. Whatever he says goes." Later, when King Xerxes' anger had cooled off and he was having second thoughts about what Vashti had done and what he had ordered against her, the king's young attendants stepped in and got the ball rolling.
"Let's begin a search for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint officials in every province of his kingdom to bring every beautiful young virgin into the palace complex. Then let the girl who best pleases the king be made queen in place of Vashti."
Well, the king liked this advice, and he took it. Now, there was this Jew who lived in the palace complex of Susa. His name was Mordecai. His ancestors had been taken from Jerusalem with the exiles. Mordecai had raised his cousin, Esther, since she had no father or mother. And the girl had a good figure and a beautiful face. And after her parents died, Mordecai had adopted her. So, when the king's order had been publicly posted, many young girls were brought to the palace complex in Susa. Esther was among them. Now, there was a fella who was overseeing all these young girls. And he liked Esther, and he took a special interest in her. So, right off the bat, he started her beauty treatments. He ordered special food and put her and her maids in the best rooms in the harem. Esther didn't say anything about her family or racial background because Mordecai had told her not to. Every day, Mordecai strolled beside the court of the harem to find out how Esther was and to get news of what she was doing. Well, each girl's turn to go into King Xerxes came after she had completed 12 months of the prescribed beauty treatments, 6 months treatments with oil of myrrh, followed by 6 months with perfumes and various cosmetics. When it was time for the girl to go to the king, she was given whatever she wanted to take with her. She would go there in the evening. In the morning, she would return to the harem. She never again went back to the king, unless the king took a special liking to her and asked for her by name. So, when it was Esther's turn to go to the king, she asked for nothing. Esther, just as she was, won the admiration of everybody who saw her. So she was taken to King Xerxes in the 10th month in the 7th year of the king's reign. And the king fell in love with Esther far more than with any of his other women or any of the other virgins. He was totally smitten by her. So he placed a royal crown on her head and made her queen in the place of Vashti. And then the king gave a great banquet for all his nobles and officials. Esther's banquet. He proclaimed a holiday for all the provinces, handed out gifts with royal generosity. And all this time, Esther had kept her family background and race a secret, just as Mordecai had ordered her to do. And Esther still did what Mordecai told her, just as when she was being raised by him. Well, on one of the occasions, when the virgins were being gathered together, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. And on this day, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the entrance, well, they had it in for the king and were making plans to kill King Xerxes. Mordecai learned of the plot, and he told Queen Esther, who then told King Xerxes, giving credit to Mordecai. When the thing was investigated and confirmed as true, the two men were hanged on the gallows. All of this was written down in a logbook that was kept for the king's use. So, sometimes later, King Xerxes promoted a fellow named Haman, making him the highest-ranking official in the government. All the king's servants at the king's gate used to honor Haman by bowing down and kneeling before him, which is what the king had commanded. Well, everybody except Mordecai. Mordecai wouldn't do it, wouldn't bow down to Haman. And when Haman saw for himself that Mordecai didn't bow down and kneel before him, he was outraged. Meanwhile, having learned that Mordecai was a Jew, Haman hated to waste his fury on just one Jew. He looked for a way to eliminate not just Mordecai, but all the Jews throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. Sometime later, Haman spoke with King Xerxes. So he says to Xerxes, there's an odd set of people scattered throughout your kingdom who don't fit in. Their custom and ways are different from those of everybody else. Worse, they disregard the king's laws. You shouldn't put up with them. If it please the king, let orders be given that they be destroyed. I'll pay for it myself. I'll finance the whole operation.
Well, go ahead.
said the king to Haman, it's your money, do whatever you want with these people. So the bulletins were sent out by couriers to all of the king's provinces with orders to eliminate all the Jews, young and old, men and women, babies, to eliminate all of them on a single day and to plunder their goods. And the order was also posted in the palace complex of Susa. So the king and Haman sat back, had a drink, while the city of Susa reeled from the news. When Mordecai learned what had been done, he ripped his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, and then he went out in the streets of the city crying out in loud and bitter cries. Esther's maids and eunuchs came and they told her what he was doing. The queen was stunned. Esther called for Hadash, one of the royal eunuchs whom the king had assigned to wait on her. And she told Hadash to go to Mordecai and to get the full story of what was happening. So Hadash went to Mordecai, and Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him. And he also told him the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to deposit in the royal bank to finance the massacre of all of these Jews. Well, Hadash came back, told Esther everything Mordecai had said. And Esther talked it over with Hadash. And then she sent him back to Mordecai with this message. Everyone who works for the king knows there's a single fate for every man or woman who approaches the king without being invited: death. The one exception is if the king extends his gold scepter, then he or she may live. But it's been 30 days now since I've been invited to come to the king. Well, when Hadash told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai sent her this message. Don't think that just because you live in the king's house, you're the one Jew who will get out of this alive. If you persist on staying silent at a time like this, help and deliverance will arrive for the Jews from someplace else. But you and your family will be wiped out. Who knows? Maybe you were made queen for such a time as this. Well, Esther sent her answer back to Mordecai. Go and get all the Jews living in Susa together. Fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days. And if you do this, I'll go to the king, even though it's forbidden. If I die, I die. 3 days later, Esther, dressed in her royal robes, she took up a position in the inner court in front of the king's throne room. The king was on his throne facing the entrance. And when he noticed Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased to see her. The king extended his gold scepter in his hand. And Esther approached, touched the tip of the scepter. The king asked, "And what's your desire, Queen Esther? What do you want? Ask, and it's yours, even if it's half my kingdom." "If it please the king," said Esther, "let the king come with Haman to a dinner I've prepared for him." "Get Haman at once," said the king, "so we can go to dinner with Esther." So the king and Haman joined Esther at the dinner she had arranged. And as they were drinking wine, the king said, "Now, what is it you want, Esther? Just ask." Esther answered, "Here's what I want. If the king favors me and is pleased to do what I desire and ask, let the king and Haman come again tomorrow to the dinner that I will fix for them. Then I'll give a straight answer to the king's question." Well, Haman left the palace that day beaming. But then he saw Mordecai sitting at the king's gate, oblivious to him. Haman was furious with Mordecai, but he held himself in. He went on home. He got his wife and all his friends together, and he started bragging about how much money he had and about how the king had promoted him to the highest position in the government. On top of that, Haman continued, Queen Esther invited me to a private dinner she gave for the king, just the three of us, and she's invited me to another one tomorrow. But I can't enjoy any of it when I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Well, his wife and all his friends said, Hey, build a gallows, 75 feet high. First thing in the morning, speak with the king. Get him to order Mordecai hanged on it. Then happily go with the king to dinner. Yeah, Mordecai liked that idea. And he had a gallows built. That night, that very night, the king couldn't sleep. So he ordered the record book, the day-by journal of events, to be brought and read to him. And they came across a story about the time that Mordecai had exposed the plot of the two royal eunuchs who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. And the king asked, Well, what great honor was given to Mordecai for this? Nothing, replied the king's servant. Nothing has been done for him. Well, the king said, is anyone out in the court? Now, Haman had just come into the outer court of the king's palace to talk to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows that he had built for him. The king's servant said, Mordecai's out there waiting in the court. Bring him in, said the king. When Haman entered, the king said, Haman, what would be appropriate for the man the king especially wants to honor? Haman thought to himself, he must be talking about honoring me. Who else? So he answered the king, for the man the king delights to honor, do this. Bring a royal robe that the king has worn and a horse that the king has ridden. Robe the man and lead him on horseback throughout the city square, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king especially wants to honor. Go and do it, the king said to Haman. Don't waste another minute. Take the robe and the horse and do what you have proposed to Mordecai, the Jew who sits at the king's gate. Don't leave out a single detail of your plan. So, Haman took the robe and the horse. He robed Mordecai and led him through the city square, proclaiming before him, this is what is done for the man the king especially wants to honor. Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman fled to his house, thoroughly mortified, hiding his face. And when Haman had finished telling his wife and all his friends everything that had happened to him, his wife said, if this Mordecai is in fact a Jew, you're as good as ruined. While they were still talking, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman off to the dinner that Esther had prepared. So the king and Haman went to dinner with Queen Esther. And at the second dinner, while they were drinking wine, the king again asked, Queen Esther, what would you like? Half of my kingdom. Just ask, and it's yours. Queen Esther answered, if I have found favor in your eyes, O king, and if it please the king, give me my life and my people, their lives. We've been sold. I and my people, sold to be massacred, eliminated. King Xerxes exploded. Who
Where is he? This is monstrous. An enemy, an adversary. This evil Haman, said Esther.
Haman was terror-stricken before the king and queen. And the king, raging, left his wine, stomped out into the palace garden. And Haman stood there, pleading with Queen Esther for his life. And as the king came back from the palace garden into the banquet hall, Haman was groveling on the couch on which Esther reclined. The king roared out, "Will he even molest the queen while I'm just around the corner?" When that left the king's mouth, all the blood drained from Haman's face. One of the king's attendants spoke up. "Look over there. There's the gallows Haman built for Mordecai, who saved the king's life." The king said, "Hang him on it." So Haman was hanged on the very gallows that he had built for Mordecai. The same day, King Xerxes gave Queen Esther the entire estate of Haman, archenemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king because Esther had explained their relationship. The king took off his signet ring, which he had taken back from Haman, and he gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over Haman's estate. Then Esther again spoke to the king, falling at his feet, begging with tears. The king again extended his gold scepter to Esther. She got to her feet. She stood before the king, and she said, "If it please the king, and he regards me with favor, let an order be written that cancels the plan of Haman to annihilate the Jews. How can I bear to stand by and watch the massacre of my own relatives?" King Xerxes said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, "Go ahead now and write whatever you decide on behalf of the Jews, then seal it with a signet ring." So Mordecai dictated and wrote, "Under the name of King Xerxes, seal the order with a royal signet ring," and the order authorized the Jews in every city to arm and defend themselves to the death, killing anyone who threatened them or their women or their children, and confiscating for themselves anything owned by their enemies. Mordecai walked out of the king's presence wearing a royal robe of violet and white, a huge gold crown, and a purple cape of fine linen. And the city of Susa exploded with joy. For Jews, it was all good times and laughter. They celebrated. They were honored. And it was that way all over the country. The Jews took to the streets in celebration, cheering and feasting. Not only that, but many non-Jews became Jews. Now it was dangerous not to be a Jew. Mordecai became more and more powerful, and the Jews finished off all of their enemies with the sword, slaughtering them left and right. And they also publicly hanged the 10 sons of Haman, the archenemy of the Jews. So Mordecai wrote all of this down, and he sent copies to all the Jews in all King Xerxes' provinces, calling for an annual celebration. When the Jews got relief from their enemies, the month in which their sorrow turned to joy and their mourning somersaulted into a holiday for parties and fun and laughter and the sending and receiving of presents and giving of gifts to the poor. What started then became a tradition for them, their children, and all future converts to remember these 2 days every year. These days are to be remembered and kept by every single generation, every last family, every province and city. These days of Purim must never be neglected among the Jews. The memory of them must never die out among their descendants. And this is the story of Esther.